Well, how are you doing? Good. Hey, I just want to give a shout out to Pastor Shane and Pastor Rusty, who spoke last weekend at the various campuses. Didn't they do a good job? Let's give them a hand. Well, it's good to be back, and had a great time down in Portland. I'll share with you about that in just a moment. But let me ask you a question. Can you remember a time where you made a decision based on a misunderstanding or when you've been misunderstood? Any of you raise your hands, say that would be true of you? Yeah, some of you are saying, hey, that's how I'm here with the person I'm married to. No, what happened to me, I was down in Portland and I was speaking at a church. A good friend of mine pastors there, and it was right before the first service. They have three morning services, and I had my coffee there. I had my Starbucks. Well, I'm a little quirky in many ways, but one of the ways I'm quirky is when it comes to coffee. I have this sort of sugar-free syrup I like to put in that I can't get at any of the coffee places. But, you know, I didn't want to be one of those guys, you know, the guy who comes in, not only doctors up his coffee, but brings his own stuff in to doctor up his coffee. I thought that'd be a little bit weird. So it's right before the first service, and I'm there, and I'm carrying my chocolate syrup in the trunk of my car. I have my Starbucks. And then so I open it up, and I don't really want anyone to see what I'm doing because I'm a little bit embarrassed. And so I have this, and I'll show you the syrup. I have this, and I have my Starbucks cup, and I'm sort of looking around. And I'm pouring it in my coffee. Well, right at that moment, there's a lady. She drives up really slowly. She looks at me, she looks again, and then she just shakes her head. She's like, that explains it. Well, you know, when it comes to areas, especially around our finances that we're going to talk about, it's so easy to misunderstand God's plan for our lives and to really, for me, even as a speaker, to be misunderstood. But there are a lot of questions around this topic, and I'm not going to be able to answer all of them in depth, but I want to hit on a few of the issues that people ask around money and finances and stewardship and then debt and all of those sort of things. There was an article out just a couple years ago, What is the American Dream? And it was an open-ended question. It wasn't a financial question, but listen to the top five answers. To own a home, number one. Not living paycheck to paycheck. Number three, financial security. Number four, financial independence. And number five, to take care of my family financially. It's interesting when we're asked that question, what's the American dream, how the top five answers all had to do with finances. Now, I know as we explore this topic, there's some of you, you're like, hey, this is great. You're going to answer the question that I asked. There's others of you who are like, this is wonderful. I finally got my friend to come to church, and you're talking about money. You're welcome. That's all I'd have to say to you. we should just break the ice anyway. You know, why don't you, like, just turn to the person next to you, tell them your income before and after taxes. You know, that would just some of you are actually going to do that, which is crazy. Well, when it comes to money and money in church in particular, it can be easy to be misunderstood. And so let me tell you what my goal is for us today. Really, not that it's going to all be accomplished today, but really, as God interacts with our finances, I think that we would have peace. People have a lot of anxiety around money, and it's not necessarily tied to income, that there would be a sense of prosperity. I don't believe that if you trust Jesus, God makes you rich, but I do believe when you operate according to biblical principles that things tend to work out better financially, and my prayer is that for prosperity, for freedom. A lot of people are real in bondage when it comes to money and debt. To make a difference, to be wise, to embrace God's values, to have hope, and to teach and raise your kids well in this important area. And I hope that you'll not misunderstand God's plan for your life when I'm teaching, or really the tangible steps that we can take to have more freedom, faith, and joy in this area. It's interesting, if you look at the scripture, when it comes to money, there's one, I think 1,360 verses just in the New Testament about it. But it is set up in the negative when it is in the negative, how it's the primary competition with God, that oftentimes we'll seek financial resources to do things for us that God was meant to do. And for some of us, we're uptight when it comes to money, and don't be uptight about money, because money is really about the lordship of Jesus Christ. It's way bigger than just our resources. It's what's calling the shot in our lives. We read this in Matthew 6:21. It says, "For where your treasure is, your heart will be also." And the rest of that chapter goes on to say how there's two twins that can really rob us of joy in this area of our life. One is worry. Any of you worry about money? Yeah, we all worry about money, don't we? In fact, many of us thought we were invincible before 2008, and then a lot of us suffered, whether it was with your retirement or housing, and there's been a sense of anxiety ever since. And then there's also that sense of we seek money to do more than really it can do for us. Well, the Bible talks about money again and again. 16 of Jesus' 38 parables are about money. It talks about money five times more than prayer. But I think the best place to look is really in 1 Timothy. That's where I want to focus today. 1st, 2nd Timothy, and Titus are what are called the pastoral epistles. They're written by the Apostle Paul to church leaders saying, this is what you should teach. This is how you should live. This is how you should operate in your personal life. This is how churches should operate. But this is also what you should teach other people. And in 1 Timothy chapter 6, the Apostle Paul is talking to his apprentice in the ministry. And he's saying, this is what I want you to teach people when it comes to finances. He says in verse 17, there's a lot before that, but I just want to look at these few verses in particular. It says, command those who are rich in the present world. And by the way, that's where a lot of us are like, okay, we're not rich. And because really we always view that by comparison. We always view, you know, we're comparing ourselves to Bill Gates or whoever, and we're saying, I don't feel rich. Well, you've heard the statistics. If you make $34,000 a year or more, you're really in the top 1.5% of the entire world. And so from a global perspective, we are rich. It says, not to be arrogant, nor to put hope in their wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so they may take hold of life that is truly life. And so we're told what money is in this passage. And so, and I'm going to teach more than preach, just give you some descriptions there. That way, you know, you can just relax. Some of you are like, hey, man, I feel confident in this area. Others of you are like, you know, this is more of an issue for me. Well, money is a potential problem. That's what it says. And this is what we're often here in church, but it's so much more than this. We're told not to be arrogant or to put our hope in wealth. Jesus says you can't serve both God and money. That it can be a problem when we seek security in our money, and when we seek that, our identity in our money alone, things that God is meant to give us. Well, that's what we hear, but money is also a blessing. We read what God has richly provided for our enjoyment. And I've said this before because I think this is an important correction. especially as some Christians today are saying, you know what, material wealth and possessions are a bad thing. I can get that because really we can live in a society with excess. But that is not biblical. That's really a pretty radical misunderstanding of Scripture. Because Scripture would say, like we just read, God provides things for our enjoyment. The image that's given is of a father with children. And so when you give your child a gift, they're happy, right? But you're happy as well, unless they manipulated you to get the gift and then you're sort of bitter, but that's a whole other sermon on parenting we'll do later. But no, you're happy about that. Well, as I was preparing for this message, I was looking for, you know, some good humor on money. So I was listening to some other messages, and you know, they're good for, you know, many of them were good, but I gotta tell you, a lot of them were pretty negative, and the message was this: money is bad, so give it all to the church, you know? And I'm like, okay, that's, you know, that works out okay for the church, but I don't really think that's a biblical understanding of financial resources. See, money is a sacred trust that we're told to be rich in good deeds and willing to share, that we will bless others through what God has given us. In fact, Jesus tells stories like a shrewd manager who was entrusted with different with money, and people who were entrusted with different amounts of money in the parable of the talents, and how each was held accountable for how they delivered on this sacred trust. Well, money is also a means to an end. It is not the end in and of itself. Now, I know it can feel like the end, because in our society, often we say, hey, this is how we keep score. These are the winners, and these are the losers in society. It's interesting, though, the older you get, it tends to fade to the background a little bit. As people find out, no, there are other things that are really incredibly important. And in fact, to be very wealthy and be lonely, that's a miserable place. To succeed in the scorecard of the corporate world, and I've talked to so many people who have, and to fail with family and kids, that can be a hard place to live as well. As I said, we can't look for money to do something for us that God is meant to do for us. God is the one who provides. See, motives are important when it comes to money. It's not just what we do with our resources, it's our motives as well. In fact, as a pastor, I think about my motives. When I was down in Portland, I visited a coffee shop, Stumptown Coffee. I don't know if you've heard of that. Probably known as the best coffee in the Northwest. It's down in a very scary area of Portland, by the way, by Voodoo Donuts and a couple establishments that say they're for gentlemen, but let me tell you, no gentleman would be going in there. And so, but I went and I got some Stumptown coffee, and that was really great. And there are a lot of really colorful people in line, people who, you know, who look like they may not live on the plateau. And I was talking to one of those guys in line, and I thought, this is great. I'm going to talk to this guy about Jesus. And this is, you know, it can't be self-serving in any way. It's not like, oh, and then he can come to Timberlake Church or anything like that. This is just a great opportunity. This guy was really, really receptive. As we were talking, you know, he said, hey, what do you do? I told him why I was down there in Portland. And he was telling a little bit about his spiritual story. And I said, man, you should just, you should get in a church where you can learn more about what it really means to follow Jesus. And he goes, I'm not even from here. And I go, really, where are you from? He goes, oh, yeah, have you heard a city up north that's called Kirkland? I'm like, oh, okay, come on, come to Timberlake, you know. But you know, our motives are really important in how we
use our financial resources. See, money is also an opportunity. You can make an impact in your family. You can make an impact in your church. You can make an impact in your world through money. And by the way, we're called to do all three. In church, hopefully we do a good job of letting you know about every other weekend. We'll share a testimony. Usually it's someone who's come to Christ, or maybe it's a missions project we're involved in. And you just know that your resources here, they really make a difference. Hopefully you can see the difference that they're making in your family as well. And I'm going to talk about how we can use those, but it's very important just the way we use those with our family. But it's also maybe in your business. You have the opportunity and you run your own business. The way you treat your employees is a sacred trust. A number of families at Timberlake have adopted kids. See, there's giving and all of that, and that's really important. But it's everything that we have belongs to God. Maybe you use your car to drive junior hires to the midweek Bible studies. Maybe if you have a ski boat, you use that for the high school camp. Hint, hint. You say, oh, I don't know if God's calling me to do that. He is. He told me. He told me. We have more high schoolers going than ever before to camp. Well, it also affords us an opportunity to teach our kids about life, because you have this thing that's very concrete, and money will give us the opportunity to teach our kids about responsibility, about delayed gratification, which is really important, because when it comes to other areas like sexuality, we want them to learn those lessons as well. But money is such a great tool for us to teach our kids. Well, as we look at that, I want to consider four wise actions. And as I said, this is in many ways an overview. I really should have done probably a 3 or 4 week series, but I'm trying to just hit one topic at a time in this You Ask For It series. And it was, I think, almost 5 years ago since I've done a series on the different aspects of money. But I'm gonna, in an overview, look at four wise actions. Number one, the first wise action is to drop guilt and reject greed. To drop guilt and to reject greed. The twin enemies of joy and any prosperity God has given us are guilt and greed. Guilt says, I shouldn't have what I have. Well, God gave you the ability to earn those resources. If you didn't steal them, then you can be thankful for them. Greed says, no matter what I have, I need more to be happy. In fact, I think it was John Paul Getty. Someone asked him, he was worth $3.5 billion many years ago, and was asked, how much money do you want? He said, oh, just a little bit more. And we can have that sense of greed as well. I love the balance implicit in the observation of Solomon, who is known as not only the wealthiest man in the world, but the wisest man in the world. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and to be happy with their toil, this is a gift from God. What this really speaks to is contentment. It's like the question you may have heard before, who's more content, the woman with $1 million or the woman with 12 children? Who? Woman with 12 children, because she doesn't want any more. See? You know, contentment is, you hadn't heard that one. That's some of you are saying, I was good with two. Well, how do we reject greed and drop guilt? The scripture teaches, when it talks about generosity, the whole idea of putting God first with the tithe. And that's important. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. Again, can't get into great detail with that. But I think there's a principle and a pattern of giving, saving, and living that helps us just operate really well. I know poor people who are very, very stingy and greedy. I know wealthy people who are very generous. I know wealthy people who are very stingy as well. So what I've described before is the 10-10-80 plan. And some of you may use a different formula. But the first, give 10% to the Lord. That's a tithe. The Bible talks about that. In fact, the word tithe literally means a tenth. What I've done in the past sometimes, and I think I've not handled this well, because I want to be liked by everyone. I'm like, oh gosh, I know for people who aren't given anything to say, you know, give your first 10% to the Lord is really tough. So, you know, I'll help them, you know, just start with 1% or 2% or 3%. And, you know, that's probably not what I should have been teaching. Because I was thinking about it, with any other area of obedience, I wouldn't teach that to you. If you came to me and said, you know what, I'm really cheating on my spouse, and I wouldn't say, well, you know, will you only cheat half as much? Could you start there, you know? Say, no, you want to be completely faithful. And so the Bible talks about giving our first 10% to the Lord. And that's something whether you say, hey, you know, I go to a different church. Well, that's where you should give it. You give it at the place you worship. And then the second 10% is for saving or debt reduction. Now, some of you have significant debt, and so you're going to probably have less on the 80 end. But we've lived by the 10% to the Lord at minimum, 10% for savings, and then 80% to live on. And the great news is that no matter how much or how little money you have, it's a very, very doable plan. My wife and I, over the years, we give our first 10% here at Timberlake, but we also are very committed to supporting other ministries as well. And we don't take the 10% and split it up. We say we're 10% Lord at our church where we worship, but we also want to be part of God's mission work in the world. We're part of building hope as well. And then the savings, 10%, so we'll have something to retire on, because otherwise I'm going to just have to get used to the phrase, welcome to Walmart. and then live on 80%. You know, I was thinking about that. I was thinking as I saw people riding by on their bikes today, the Beaver Lake Triathlon. I don't know if any of you have ever done that before. That was happening, the Beaver Lake Triathlon. And people talk to me, they say, oh, you should do a triathlon. And I'm like, you've got to understand, I'm just not that committed to fitness. I really am not, you know? And I'm like, and I could never do a triathlon. And as I was driving along Lake Washington, and there were some of you who were part of the triathlon, you were on your bikes, you were making me drive 5 miles per hour. It was a wonderful one-hour trip to downtown Redmond today. And as I was driving along, I noticed that there were all people of all ages, all shapes and sizes. And I'm looking at people who are a lot older than I am, maybe a little more out of shape than I am. And I'm thinking, they did it, and I was the wimp that didn't do it. What's the difference between them and me? Well, I spend many hours in prayer every day, so I don't have time for that. No, I do spend time in prayer. But you know what the difference is? They made a decision to do it. And when it comes to saving or being biblically faithful, it's just a decision to do it. Once you make the decision to do it, it's really, really easy. Because then you arrange the rest of your life accordingly. And so God's plan for both greed and guilt is to put him first, give our first to him. And many of you do that. We've had more people get on board, and that makes a huge difference here at Timberlake. And then secondly, to reduce your debt. We read in Proverbs 22:7, it says, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender." Now, you got to get this. This is before there was consumer credit. people were borrowing to buy houses and sometimes to buy farms. So it wasn't even like as bad a debt as we have today. But my encouragement would be, one, and we have some challenges at the end, we're going to put you towards some resources, is that if you have debt, a lot of consumer debt, really almost any consumer debt, is get on a plan to reduce that. I know people say, well, you know, I'm going to just put everything towards, no, you know, don't crash diet your debt. It's going to work about as well as a crash diet works. You just say, no, I'm gonna pick some bills and I'm going to pick away at the debt that I have. Next time I get a bonus or a pay raise, I'm going to do that. And it's a good stewardship principle to live by. Not all debt is bad. The principle, and you know this, I'm sure, already. Anything that's an appreciating asset, that's called an investment. Anything that's a depreciating asset, that's called good marketing. No, that's called that, you know, we bought that. So whether it's a car or clothes or whatever. I knew a young couple that they ended up getting divorced. And a Christian young couple and really a good couple. But they made a decision early on. And they said, you know, and they, you know, they really hadn't worked much, hadn't really been to college or anything like that. They said, we're getting married. We deserve a big honeymoon. And so they went to Europe and they lived and had a wonderful time. And they did it because they borrowed from family, they had credit card debt, and you're saying, well, oh, was it worth it? They totally thought it was worth it. Even after the first payments came, they thought it was worth it. Until there were certain things they were unable to do in life because they had made that decision. She also had wanted a huge rock. And she said, I deserve a big diamond. And that, again, was debt. The marriage ended up not working out. And they ended up saying, God failed us. The Bible says that the borrower is servant to the lender. So God's saying, don't put yourself... By the way, I talk to a lot of couples, and the marriage problems are almost always about sex or money. And those can be just incredible issues in a marriage. I mean, and I'm not saying don't have nice stuff. Trust me, don't hear me say that. I mean, have you seen my wife's diamond? If you haven't, you just haven't gotten up close enough or you don't have good eyesight. So we bought and I paid cash for that. We had to pay for our own wedding too, because my family's cheap. So we paid for our own wedding and we did all that. And we just know we weren't going to go into debt. I'm not saying we're perfect, but within the first, we had some college loans and all of that. But in the first 2 years of our marriage, we paid off all our debts. We bought our first home, which, by the way, the home we live in today, I always say we put a $2,100 down payment on, because that was the down payment on our very first home. And we just rolled that in. Now someday, you're going to see my wife, Terry, and I'm going to buy her, I'm going to replace that diamond, and she is going to have a huge diamond. Now, she may be too old to lift up her hand anymore with that heavy of a diamond, but someday we're going to have a big diamond like that. But the delayed gratification is a real big deal. And you know, that can carry over into almost any area of our lives. Have we made our mistakes as a couple? Absolutely. But we made a decision early on. And in fact, early on, when we first got married, Terry made about 3 times as much money as I did. And you're saying, gosh, that was so long ago. How do you still remember that? She's reminded me of it a few times since. And what we did is we used that to take care of the debts early on. And maybe that's the place that you're in today. Number three, impart your values. And I should have gotten here quicker. Psalm 22:6, it says, "Start your children off in the way they should go, and when they are old, they will not turn from it." And we think of that in terms of faith, but this also has to do with finances. I meet so many people in our church who, you have done well, worked hard, you are good with money. I would say, not just because we live in an area where incomes are a little higher, but I've met more people who are really wise with their money, but yet when it comes to their kids, make decisions that are challenging. Really, it goes back to what social scientists call the problem of the third generation. The third generation, almost very little lasts to the third generation. Of all family businesses, less than 10% survive to the third generation. So in the first generation, you have the people who are the innovators, the people who sacrifice, the people who are generous. The second generation, they say, are the preservers. They get to enjoy it, but it really wasn't theirs. And then the third generation, they maybe even have a disdain for it. One social science scientist says the first generation starts it, the second runs the business, and the third ruins it. Well, how do we develop first generation faith? I'm going to talk about that this fall, but I'm talking about money in particular. How do we have first generation principles evident in our kids? We want them to be hard workers and innovative and generous. We need to deal with a couple issues that we see, or a few of them. One, I think that we rescue too quickly. We don't let our kids suffer the consequences of their decisions. Now, I'm not talking about being cold-hearted, but you know, how many science projects have you done for your kids? How many papers have you completed? You know, and what will happen is we're like, oh, we don't want them to get a bad grade, because then they're not going to get, you know, into this school or that school. And maybe it's even a reflection on us. Think about the story of the prodigal son. The father was there and loved and accepted the son when he came back. He welcomed him. But when you read the story of the prodigal son in the Bible, he never went out and rescued him. He waited for the son to come to his senses. And for some of you, there's a conversation to have. And it's like, you know, son, you're 35 now. It's time for you. And honestly, I've met people who in their 30s are saying, hey, this is the first time I've ever bought my own car. This is the first, and I think it's good that we learn that. You might be here and your parents are supporting you and you hate me. That's okay. We reward too frequently. We give them what they have not earned. And what we do is we bow down and worship at the altar of their happiness. And we don't model well sometimes. And what we really want to do is to model to them what it means to be wise stewards of our money, to give to God first, to put away money for a rainy day or retirement or whatever, and then to enjoy without guilt or greed the rest that we have. And my wife and I, we've done this so many different ways in our marriage. At one point, we did the envelope system, where we just, you know, had cash in envelopes to be good stewards and all of that. With our kids, we gave them envelopes that they would have an allowance, but not only that, when we would go out, let's say, and it wasn't a family meal, to a fast food restaurant, they had so much money and they would budget it. And by the way, kids' temperaments are different. because we have one kid who's a saver and the other kid's a sinner. You know, we have, we really do. One of our daughters, we gave our kids, and you know, I felt like it was a fairly decent amount. But we would be out and we'd do fast food. Fast food, you had to take money out of your own envelope. And she hadn't eaten for 8 hours. And we're like, we're going to go out to fast food. She's like, are you paying for it? And like, no, remember, that comes out of our envelope. She's like, I'll be okay. I think I can make it, Dad. And, so kids do have different temperaments. We want to teach them to put God first, to save and live on the rest. And then fourth, to make a difference. Fourth wise decision is just to make a difference. It says in 2 Corinthians 9:11, you will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion, and through us your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. So as we close this message, I want you to consider, and if you'll take out your connection card, four different challenges for you. Because I know many of you are in different places. Some of you are great, you don't have a lot of debt. Some of you are, you know, you're very generous. For some of us, we might take multiple of these challenges. And if you take these, we'll just send you a little email of encouragement around this. The first challenge has to do with the debt freedom challenge. And so maybe you're here and you say, you know what, I really want help in this area. And so what we want to do is link you to some resources, let you know when we have classes again, Financial Peace University, and help you get a handle on this. I've listed some resources there as well. There's also the Kingdom Living and Giving Challenge. This is for those of us who say, you know what, I really do all of these things, and I not only want to be faithful in the tithe, I want to go beyond that. Some of you here, maybe you've come since we started the Building Hope Project, and you want to be part of that as people have moved away. By the way, most people have been very, very faithful in their Building Hope commitments, and that has been amazing. But as people have moved away, we need other people to jump on board. Or maybe you're looking for a mission opportunity where you can invest your resources. There's also the Next Generation Challenge. And what we want to do is to link you to some parenting resources around money. And maybe you're a grandparent. And these would be resources where you can help your kids get a handle on this early in life to where they won't struggle later in life. And then the 90-day tithe challenge. We do this about once or twice a year, where you might be, and you say, you know, Ben, I am a Christian, but I have not yet really been regular and faithful in my giving, and man, that just seems like a big deal. And we always go back to Malachi chapter 3, where it says, test me in this, says the Lord. And we say, try tithing for 90 days. And if you don't, and give it away where it's traceable, to where we know how much you actually gave. And then if there's no spiritual benefit at the end of it, and you say, you know what, hey, I just don't even believe in this. If you want your money back, we'd give it back. And you say, well, why would you do that? Is that a gimmick? No, it's just that I know some of you will not take the step of faith because you have so much fear around money. And I'm saying, why don't you take that step of faith? So maybe it's tithing if you haven't done that. It's debt reduction. It's Kingdom Living and Giving, or the Next Generation Challenge. See, we think of sacrifice when it comes to money. And you know, sometimes there's sacrifice involved. Sacrifice is not giving up something you like for something you don't like. Sacrifice is giving up something you love for something you love more. And when it comes to our financial resources, I think that can be true. We can say, you know, I like to have resources, but I love even what God's doing. I love my kids even more, and so I'm going to use those resources in a wise way.